Chapter 4, Gun to the Head Enlightenment. It is often darkest just before the dawn. Sojourner Truth. For 15 years, I pounded my small business into some kind of subservient yet mocking submission, carrying on like a perpetual motion machine. But of course, it was tenuous. Everything depended on me, and if I let up for one moment, my world would come crashing down. It was just a matter of time. Then, on the heels of my 7-month double shift epic, I hit a brick wall. In my arsenal of last minute bailout strategies, there was no solution to the death blow crisis looming just ahead. The inability to cover the next payroll. On payday, my staff would walk out when there were no paychecks, instantly ending my business as our clients raced elsewhere to find another answering service to handle their calls. In a single moment, Centratel would close its doors and everything I had accomplished in the past decade and a half would be lost. Not to mention that my staff of 16 would be jobless and my 300 loyal clients would be in crisis. I was a mentally and physically wrecked 50-year-old single parent facing financial and career oblivion, and it was more than an interesting coincidence the imminent end of Centratel was dovetailing with my almost certain mental and or physical breakdown. I was desperate, and for the first time angry, and the doomsday clock was ticking. Dawn. The payroll was less than a week away when, yet again lying awake in bed late one night, exhausted, I stopped thinking about work details, business philosophies, elaborate theories, or some last-minute divine intervention. It was the end, and there was nothing left to examine or ruminate about, nothing left to salvage. Except one small thing. In a last gesture of raw defiance, at least I could end things with some self-respect. As a final last-gasp effort, I would either save myself or go down in a blinding flash. This would not end with a whimper. Since everything was lost anyway, why not find one last moment of control? I lay there in the 3 a.m. darkness, reviewing the blinding flash possibilities. But something was odd. I was at peace for the first time in years. How could that be? Without coaxing and for no apparent reason, two simple, pragmatic questions charged out of the blackness. What have I been doing wrong all these years? And, since the end is coming, what is there to lose if I abandon past assumptions and look at things from a completely different angle? My what is there to lose posture was the catalyst. The certain end of Centratel opened my perception gates and gave me the freedom to consider anything. No matter how outrageous, any new idea was an option because there was no further possible downside. I had a few more days to stretch into unknown territory and do some experimentation, because what did it matter? Then answers came. I underwent an enlightenment of sorts. It sounds corny, but in my mind I rose up and out of the jungle that was my life. I was no longer an integral part of it. Floating upward, outside and slightly elevated from the chaos, I gazed down at the details of my business, spread out neatly as if on a display on a tabletop. From this bird's-eye perspective, it struck me that Centratel was simply a self-contained mechanical device. It was, and is, nothing more than the sum of an assemblage of sequential systems. Answering the phones, sales, payroll preparation, scheduling, handling complaints, etc. Each executed in a linear fashion whereby one step follows another step until the sequence for that particular system is complete. Instinctively, I knew the rest of my life operated in the same way, as an assemblage of separate and independent systems occurring in predictable, reliable sequences according to their own individual construction. Yes, I thought, of course these systems intermingle and affect each other, a holistic assemblage to be sure. But that holism can't mask the separateness of them, the beauty of their individuality. My thoughts raced at light speed as I marveled at the simple beauty of it. I understood that my previous vision of the world had been wrong. The world is not a chaotic jumble of people, objects, and events clanging together in disarray. The world is a place of order and logic, a place of predictability. The world is a collection of logical systems. For the first time, I saw Centratel as an enclosed package, an independent primary system, a separate entity like a human body, an airplane, a tree, or a city. And the primary system called Centratel shared a commonality with all other primary systems in that it was the product of the sum of the myriad separate subsystems that composed it. The logic of it was crystal clear, exquisite. A line from an old rock song by The Fix went around and around in my head as I lay there. One thing leads to another, one thing leads to another. I looked down and saw that my mode of thinking and managing had been reactionary, defensive, and incredibly inefficient. I had taken the wrong stance because the mechanics had been invisible to me. All I did was kill fires, unaware that they were the products of invisible, dysfunctional subsystems. These subsystems had lives of their own and were acting out their 1-2-3 sequences without direction, producing results that were unpredictable at the least and debilitating at the worst. My business was out of control because I had been coping with the random products of uncontrolled systems. My life was chaos, not because I was some kind of loser or unfortunate victim of circumstance, but because many of the subsystems of my life were not being managed. Out of control, these inefficient subsystems composed the dysfunctional primary systems of my life, business, health, and relationships. Who is in charge of all this? Exhausted yet exhilarated, I lay in bed floating above it all, looking down on things, savoring the delicious new vision. It was borderline mystical, a sort of near-death experience, but without the tunnel and the bright light. For the first time, it was clear that my previous perception of reality had been murky and undefined. How does the saying go? One thing I know, once I was blind, but now I see. From depths beyond my physical and mental despair, and liberated from my self-absorption, more questions surfaced, ones I had never considered before. Who is in charge of all this, and how does this world continue to function day after day, year after year, millennium after millennium? The answers to these odd questions came fast and hard. I was startled to grasp that there is no human king of everything who directs the goings-on of the world. On its own, and no matter what, this earth keeps turning and life carries on in an overall structured and organized pattern. And no one is in charge. The indomitable laws of nature ensure systems work perfectly according to their construction. On this earth, gravity works all the time, everywhere. Over here, 1 plus 1 equals 2. And over there, 1 plus 1 also equals 2. The laws of nature cause the mechanics of the world to be dependable and predictable, and the gift with which we humans have been blessed is the ability to get in the middle of it all and to manipulate it, to direct our lives to be what we want them to be, to use the laws of nature to our advantage. And no single human or group of humans is in charge. I floated in my thoughts and wondered at the silent, invisible background organizational strength that keeps things chugging ahead like a train, despite our human race's best attempts to derail the process. Cyclically, methodically, and for whatever reason, this complex world moves along on its own, adjusting, balancing, and counterbalancing. And at the root of it all, and in the middle of it all, uncountable separate linear systems are at work. The world is 99.9% efficient. This system's rationale is not another feel-good, think-positive invocation, and it's not about faith. It's about stone-cold mechanical reality. Think about the systems of our lives and then do the numbers. We wake, shower, dress, eat, go to work, and proceed through the day to return to our loved ones in the evening. Then we watch TV, read, and go to bed early, or stay up late. We go to sleep, and then we awake again the next morning. Everything works fine 99.9% of the time. That's the cursory overview. Break it down and sequentially note the other events of the day's chronology. It will be thousands of items long, as it includes contributing components such as the coffee maker that works every morning, the car that, despite all of its internal intricacies, operates with the turn of a key and then the turn of the wheel. The office we occupy, the complexities of the work we do, the paychecks we receive for doing that work. Consider the process of sharing information back and forth with those around us. One-on-one, voicemail, cellular phone, email, the written word. Each is a system, and 99.9% of the time, each works flawlessly. Envision the system we call TV. By simply pushing a button when we want to watch it, this incredibly complex mechanism jumps to life every time. Beyond the physical TV itself, Consider the myriad organizations that put together the programming that appears on it. Then switch gears and think about the lawnmower, the water that flows from the kitchen tap, the ubiquitous electricity that comes to our homes to give life to a host of devices, each a complex system of its own. We are mechanisms. 3 years ago, as I was charging down a city street on my mountain bike, a 16-year-old driver veered across my path. I slammed into the side of her SUV and was launched over the roof, landing on the pavement on the other side. To this day, I don't remember either of the impacts. I was knocked unconscious, coming awake only as I was loaded into the ambulance. On the way to the hospital, the paramedic asked my name. I answered correctly. Then she asked who she could call to inform that I was going to the hospital. I told her, Linda. Then she asked me where I had been on my bike, and I just couldn't remember. It was several hours before I could put the pieces together to recall the details of my ride. From this experience, a lesson was hammered home. Our minds and bodies are complex mechanisms. They are machines that perform or don't perform. They are indescribably complex collections of subsystems operating via countless sequential and cooperative protocols. Our incredibly complex minds and bodies work well most of the time, but because of the occasional mechanical glitch within a subsystem, sometimes they don't. We should never take for granted our connection to the reality around us. Never underestimate the tenuous grip we have on our worlds. We must handle our bodies and minds with care. We should be careful about upkeep and maintenance, yet challenge them so they stay strong. We must attend to them and never take them for granted. Contemplate the clothes we wear, the shopping we do, the work we perform. Consider the gas pumped into our cars at gas stations. In some faraway place, sophisticated mechanisms extract oil from the ground. Then people transport it via high-tech ships, trucks, and pipelines to refineries where the oil is converted into gasoline via complex refining processes. Next, truckers deliver the gasoline to an uncountable number of convenient locations so we can pump it into our cars whenever we feel like it. We never think twice about the intricacies of the drilling, refining, delivery systems. And this is just one of the millions of systems that touch our daily lives. And what about the human body? Consider the amazing complexity of chemicals, electrical signals, and mechanics that make it work. For each of us, billions of cells contribute to who we are, while trillions of simultaneous electrical signals execute without overt supervision as we progress through the day. Incredible! Consider the miracle of what you are doing at this moment, listening and processing these words. You are transferring my thoughts to your mind, where you instantaneously interact with what I am saying, making immediate judgments, agreeing or disagreeing, line by line. Do these complex systems sometimes fail? Of course. Nonetheless, it's a numbers game, and it is unquestionable that the systems of our lives, taken together, work perfectly more than 99.9% of the time. So far, I have focused on human systems, which are just a fraction of the total systems at work in any given second. Uncountable natural systems add to the numbers and dwarf what man has created, and they all work perfectly according to their scripts. Once one accepts the world's beautiful systems dance for what it is, the mystery of it goes even deeper. Consider that primary systems depend on subsystems, and those subsystems depend on sub-subsystems, branching outward and downward, further and further, to subprimal levels. And see that the processes of the world, the systems, repeat themselves over and over as they incrementally create new forms and dissolve old ones. Stop for a moment and attempt to draw it all in. The depth and intricacy of life's fabric is astonishing beyond comprehension. Try to grasp the beautiful complexity of life's workings and know that all by itself this world gurgles and percolates along with no overall human supervision. The countless systems that comprise life churn on and on, while most of us remain oblivious to the mystery of it, to the sheer beauty of it. It's interesting that the two most opposite groups imaginable share the wonder of the world's miraculous workings, scientists and the religious. I am neither promoting nor discounting the existence of a supreme being's controlling influence in maintaining this powerful, intriguing efficiency. The point here is that, for whatever reason, the wonderful flow of life carries on exquisitely, repeating and synchronizing over and over again, without some human's guidance. The sun comes up and later goes down. Grass grows in the spring and lies dormant in the winter. The tides rise and fall. We go to bed at night to wake up in the morning. The toaster works. The car works. Love comes, love goes, and then it comes again. We live, then we die, and another is born. Systems, 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 everywhere. A propensity for efficiency and order. I ask myself, could it be that the common presumption that says the world is not functioning well, the world is a mess, is wrong? Yes, I realize, that presumption is wrong, because in any given life, on any given day, countless events and connections, systems, work perfectly. We don't notice them, and so we take them for granted, never appreciating the impeccability of it all. We hyper-focus on personal, mechanical, and geopolitical systems that are not to our liking and conclude that deficiency is the default way of the world. Swallowed up in this, we see perfection as an anomaly and imperfection as the norm. That conclusion is backward. Overall, the systems of this world work absurdly well. 99.9% of everything works just fine, and even the parts we consider imperfect are that way only because we think those parts should be different. In truth, the world is 100% perfect if we discount what we want. However, for our purposes, let's not discount what we want. For practicality, let's characterize the world as 99.9% perfect. I lay in bed in wired stupor, thinking about how this world relentlessly churns ahead within a framework of countless efficient systems, and since there is no human king of everything, that there has to be an underlying cosmologic propensity toward efficiency and order. Something out there prefers things to go smoothly. God? This new understanding was the reverse of my previous vision of things, in which I saw the world as a place of barely controlled mayhem, tenuously held together by its human masters. I had visualized perfection, a rare thing, as an occasional harmonious chord in a universe more comfortable in its cacophony. My mind continued to race that night in 1999, and it struck me that if the universe has a predilection for order, it should be a simple thing to climb on board. And since system inefficiencies comprise such a small percentage of the things of my life, and because I have a free will, I should be able to methodically isolate problematic systems and then, one by one, manipulate their mechanics to make them efficient. It should be easy because cosmological bias is on my side. And this bias is not just rooting for efficiency, it's demanding it. The power and the why. Is there a real-time analogy for the relentless power that propels the systems of the world? Yes. Find train tracks and stand nearby while a train slams by at full speed. Feel the overwhelming strength and inevitability of it. As the enormous mass of the train surges, feel the invincibility. This is an in-the-gut sense of the universe's mechanical potency and purposefulness. It's that deliberate. The world's turning is powerful and systematic, and that is the point. Why it behaves that way is the human mystery, the ultimate question. But it is not the issue at hand. What matters here is this. Despite the common assumption that chaos reigns, the truth is that the mechanics of the world work very, very well. And if we can proceed from the premise that there is a proclivity for powerful efficiency, rather than blindly buying into society's general assumption that all is chaos, we will stop fighting things. Instead, confident and deliberate, we can dig a bit deeper and step by step construct the lives we want. Gumming up the works. Of course, it must be said that although there is a regulatory force disposed to keep systems flowing, human free will enables us to cause havoc on personal and global scales. When a system doesn't produce the outcome we want it to produce because of something we did or didn't do, we must recognize this is the downside of the human race's gift of being able to influence and control systems. Dysfunctional systems may constitute just a small percentage of all systems, but for the record, let's state the obvious. We humans are inclined to disrupt things, and for this reason there have been and continue to be horrible problems in the world. The worst of it? In the last century, in fits of narcissistic insanity, tens of millions of people were slaughtered by Hitler, Mao, Stalin, Mussolini, and Pol Pot. These were human systems gone haywire, and still the agony continues, at its most virulent in third world countries. Then there is the self-generated personal pain of our own making, residing with our own thought processes. Add to this the self-inflicted damage caused by the neglect and the abuse of the body systems that we inhabit, not to mention no-fault setbacks such as accidents and genetic irregularities. The Forrest Gump shit happens scenario, a brief yet profoundly meaningful phrase. Large or small, cultural genocide or a missed appointment, the things that go wrong are due to component failures within systems. When a system fails to produce what we want it to produce, something within the system is not as it could be. Something is gumming up the works. Despite all this, and notwithstanding the general media's allegations otherwise, the majority of lives move from beginning to end with a minimum of true overt anguish. When there is trauma, it is most often short-lived. For most of us, real discomfort is a small slice of the pie, and when it happens, it is usually the result of self-inflicted mental anguish and fear, negative constructs within our thinking, not overt external physical pain. Yes, again, of course, there are the notable exceptions. I am not a Pollyanna. Because the universe's overwhelming inclination is towards stability and efficiency, the events that go wrong in a typical person's life are but a small percentage of that person's total experience. Systems want to be efficient. If a system could talk, it would say, "My single goal, and I am passionate about it, is to accomplish the task that I was built to accomplish." This means that our personal efforts to make things right are aided by an enigmatic power that works hard to propel those efforts to success. Within one's life, getting things to work swimmingly is not a difficult task if one pays attention to the mechanics of how things work. Late that night, lying awake in bed, I realized the Force is with you. Safety, comfort, and PC in the first and third worlds. Why are there major differences between life in the Western world and life in, say, Afghanistan or rural China? Why is life in the West easier than life in the East? A part of the answer is that in the Western world, there are far more safety and protective systems than in the East. Therefore, our lives are less in jeopardy. A simple example. In the West, we wear seatbelts in our cars 99% of the time. It's the law, and the law is a system. In the many times I've been to the rural Far East, I have seldom seen a driver or passenger buckle up. In most third world countries, there are no enforceable seatbelt laws. Are seatbelts actually in the cars? Yes, they usually lay buried in the seat cushions, but sometimes the driver has altogether removed them. Another example. Here in the West, there are quick and severe penalties for anyone's non-cause assertive aggression toward another. In much of the East, there are few protections, and justice systems can be corrupt and impotent, causing person-to-person governmental crimes to go unpunished. And the flip side? It is telling that the annoyance of the politically correct is nowhere but in the West. This is a result of a culture trying too hard to regulate. It's system thought taken to the extreme by people whose basic needs are satisfied and who have the time and energy to attempt to channel the thoughts and actions of others. To the rural Asian, there is no PC thinking, as life is negotiated via just a few systems, systems having to do with survival. In most of the world, people don't have the luxury of expending energy on politically correct gyrations. For a Westerner, it is a good thing to live for a while in a third world household. It's a crash course in fundamental priorities, personal humility, and root systems. Component failures and semi-enlightenment. For me, 1 plus 1 equals 2. For you, 1 plus 1 also equals 2. The natural mechanics of the world are reliable and can be trusted. And human device systems will also operate reliably if they are put together properly and then maintained. If they are not put together correctly or they are not maintained, they will fail to produce the results we want. Few people think their problems are a result of system failure. Most see their troubles as isolated events, blaming fate, horoscopes, bad luck, karma, God, the devil, neighbors, competitors, family members, the weather, The president, Congress, liberals, conservatives, global warming, too much TV, lack of money, too much money, the educational system, or just a world gone bad. And most see problems as overwhelming in number, an onslaught from out there, only to be fended off by superhuman efforts. For many, the excuse blame list is endless. I had been a lifelong resident of that camp, but when the system's vision engulfed me, there was zero chance I would ever live in that place again. I now float through the day in fascination. Instead of wallowing in a hodgepodge of unpredictability and fire killing, I see events and objects as part of one structured system or another. This real-time, outside and slightly elevated perspective has channeled peace and prosperity into my life and into the lives of those who depend on me. I call it semi-enlightenment. Negatives will sometimes worm their way into my day, most often due to my own failures. It's not often, though, not anymore. This life I lead is a result of actions. Actions rooted in my gut certainty that in the systems that compose the world's workings, there is not a cosmic inclination for chaos. Rather, there is a default propensity toward order and efficiency. Without question, I know inefficiency and its attending pain occur because of rare and isolated component problems within otherwise perfect systems. The heart of the methodology. By fixing your life's individual systems, by identifying them one at a time and then rebuilding them one by one, order, control, and peace accumulate incrementally. However, the improvements in these rebuilt systems must be made permanent, or the systems will slip back into dysfunction due to random outside influence. In the workplace, permanence happens first by creating written descriptions of how systems are to operate, and second, by making sure responsible parties follow the steps described in the documentation. We'll get to those details soon. Once systems are examined and flawed components are exposed and repaired, tweaked, systems will produce the desired result. Creating new contributing systems and altogether eliminating dysfunctional systems will do the same. And since this is all mechanical, when the changes are performed and then locked in, improvement is both instant and permanent. For your personal situation, not only can you count on an overwhelming bias toward efficiency, but also you probably won't have a whole lot of systems to adjust, create, or delete. It won't take long to get things straightened out. Now we are at the heart of the Work the System methodology. These lives we live are composed of countless linear systems, many of which are under our direct control. These systems are the invisible threads that hold the fabric of our lives together. If there is an outcome that doesn't suit us, we can change that outcome by making a component adjustment within a system, adding a system, or eliminating a system. In a life's rejuvenation, it will typically be all of the above. Whether an outcome is to your liking or not, the underlying system is performing exactly as it was constructed. You are not at the mercy of mysterious conspiring forces or of the swirling backwash of chaos. If it is in your power, and so much that affects you is in your power, you can fix things. What about those systems you can't repair because they are out of your control? Relax. If you can't fix something, don't worry about it. Do what you can, walk away and accept it, or ignore it. But for sure, don't spend time or energy agonizing over it. If you live in a democracy, vote and then don't complain. If you have a problem with a coworker, talk to him or her and then don't obsess about the outcome. If you don't like the TV program, change the channel or turn off the set. Save your energy for efforts that will provide tangible positive results within your circle of influence. The objective. Back to my story and the looming crisis at Centratel. That night in bed, yet another realization struck. My business needed at least one solid objective. From my new vantage point, I could see we had been operating without any pointed purpose. The closest I could come to a reason for the existence of the business was that I hoped we would make money and be successful. That is the single mantra of the typical small business owner or corporate middle manager. It is not concrete and directed, but amorphous and wishy-washy. Not only had I never considered its individual components, Centratel had no direction. Despite my jack-of-all-trades, fire-killer extraordinaire comportment, I didn't have a grasp on the why of Centratel. To compound the confusion, there was no vision for my personal life either. This was the birth of the strategic objective document. The crux of control, the system's perspective. Without prodding nor willing it to happen, I stepped outside my life, rose above it, and looked down, never again to settle back into the morass of my professional and personal lives. There was nothing philosophical about this new vantage point. It was mechanical and logical. I saw that the solution to my business problems did not lie in becoming more proficient at whacking moleheads, as in the whack-a-mole arcade and video games popular at that time. The solution was to find a way to eliminate the moles altogether. I had to put aside the hammer and dig down into those tunnels to find out exactly where the moles hid. When I found them, I would ruthlessly strangle them right then and there. Their grinning furry faces would not distract me. And while I was down there taking care of mole extermination, I would find a way to prevent any mole relatives from returning later. Late that night, my perspective on life permanently shifted. Deep in my gut, I grasped that perfectly executing systems were at play everywhere and all the time. My business, and my whole being for that matter, was the sum total of the systems that composed it. Confident, I would look down on these systems of my life and isolate them one at a time, viewing each as a separate, autonomous entity. Per a solid directional plan, one by one, and over whatever period of time it would take, I would disassemble and then rebuild each system so that each contributed to my stated goal. In addition to the reconstruction, I would add new systems and discard useless ones. It seemed logical. Creating efficient subsystems should cause the primary system to be efficient too. And to take this a step further, it seemed to me if the individual subsystems of my business and my life could be made more than efficient, if they were made potent and powerful, then both my business and my life would become potent and powerful. Who could argue with that logic? I just needed to identify individual subsystems and then, one by one, optimize them. I hadn't been looking for a revelation, but in my desperation, I got one. It was a vision that bared the simple mechanics of the world, mechanics that had been cloaked by the dissonance of the day. It was a viewpoint that I would hone. And in the big picture and in the smallest snapshots of my life, I would no longer specialize in spinning my wheels in futile attempts to stop chaos. I would no longer manage the results of inefficient systems. Instead, I would expend my energies on perfecting those systems, and the results would take care of themselves. For a decade and a half, although the simple reality had been floating right there in front of me, the mental turbulence of my fire-killing approach had relegated the simple earth-shaking reality to invisibility. A life's condition is not the result of luck or of being good or bad, and it's not about intelligence, karma, education, social class, political stance, religious affiliation, or how hard one works. Life is about simple mechanics, the dispassionate mechanics of the systems that compose it. This new systems perspective was not just an interesting new concept, it was an electric, life-changing vision. Once the switch flipped in my head late that night, there was no going back. I was a changed man. Rebirth of the business. It was uncanny. My thoughts raged on. Supported by indisputable logic, an entire strategy unfolded as I lay there that night. I thought, if Centratel is an organism, like a human body, or a car, or a TV, smooth and efficient operation will depend on a multitude of simultaneously functioning systems that operate automatically. In other words, the business systems I would fix and/or create would have to function without direct moment-to-moment supervision by me, the majority owner, general manager, and CEO of the company. To be sure, people would be watching things, but I would not be one of those people. The watchers would be the system improvement managers who would supervise the systems of the business without my constant over-the-shoulder intrusion. Centratel would become a self-perpetuating organism. Further, this organism would be the highest quality telephone answering service in the United States. We would accomplish this in three steps. One, we would exactly define the overall goals and strategies. It would be done on paper by creating the strategic objective and the general operating principles. Two, we would break down Centratel's workings into subsystems we could understand. Processing calls, staff management, client services, equipment, quality control, The methodology for handling client and customer calls, bookkeeping, purchasing, customer services, etc. Then, each of those subsystems would be broken down into even smaller contributing subsystems, including receivables software, customer complaint protocol, employee recruitment, equipment maintenance schedules, and so on. 3. Once isolated and exposed, we would refine and perfect those systems, one by one, so each would contribute 100% toward overall goals and each would automatically execute every time. As needed, we would create new systems from scratch and we would discard systems that didn't contribute. We would document each system by creating a working procedure for it, thus making all the perfected systems permanent. Through all of this, we would be patient as we improve things incrementally. From organic to mechanical. Why does a car perform the same way every time? Why does a city stay in the same place without spontaneously moving to a new location? Why do we, in our lifetimes, continue to be ourselves? The reason is hard mechanical reality, physicality. With the obvious exception of fluids and gases, physical objects don't morph into other physical objects or dissipate into the ether. They are dependable and predictable. On the other hand, human communication processes, organic processes, are the antithesis of physical substance. The execution of a given recurring communication protocol not only varies among the individuals performing the process, but also for any one person with the time of the day, the weather, or mood. Uncontrolled, these organic processes are feathers in the wind. In the workplace, the challenge and the solution is to make these ubiquitous organic human processes as solid and reliable as the mechanical objects that surround us. We do this with documentation. Strength and resilience. In the process of rebuilding Centratel system by system, strength and resilience would evolve as byproducts. The outside world would continue to challenge us with unexpected shakeups, but if we constructed the new systems properly, the business would become rugged and adaptable. The inevitable earthquakes would be reduced to tremors. Until this point, earthquakes had been earthquakes, and there had been too many of them. If what I saw for the business was true, that it was a primary system composed of component subsystems, each of which could be brought to high efficiency and strength, then it was logical this would be true for the other primary system that was in immediate crisis, my physical and mental self. The theory and process for fixing myself would be the same as it would be for fixing Centratel. That's the beauty of the work the system method. It applies to any life situation because it deals with fundamental cause and effect, the basic truth of how the world mechanically operates. Illustration: learning how to sleep. For any recurring problem, there is a path to sorting things out. Take the inefficient system apart and fix the pieces one by one. Earlier, I discussed my problems with getting enough sleep. Sleep intertwines with numerous other biological, social, and relationship processes, but in that broad conception, one can't begin to find a solution to improving it. What did I do via systems methodology to cure the problem? I envision sleep as an independent primary system that is composed of subsystems. The vision led me to a doctor who specializes in sleep disorders. The doctor's recommendations had a strong theme: reduction of stress. This led me to the subsystems of yoga, more sensible exercise, and meditation. I would substantially reduce my intake of caffeine, alcohol, and sugar. There were other systems to modify: changing the layout of my bedroom, removing the clock from the nightstand, refraining from reading in bed, and turning the lights off at the same time every night. I would adopt a more consistent system routine for preparing for sleep. Another thing, testing indicated my requirements for sleep were less than average. 6 hours was enough. And so I should avoid lying awake in bed, expecting to get 8 or 9 hours. Lying there waiting for sleep to arrive was stressful in itself. Instead, I should get up and read, work, or even exercise. With the help of my regular doctor, I found my blood chemicals were out of balance. Those chemical imbalances affected my sleep pattern, and it was a simple matter to fix those subsystem imbalances with supplements. I had to reduce my hours at the office, and that meant getting the company to run itself without me being there every minute. Of course, that transformation was already underway, using the same work the system thinking. I got back to a healthy sleeping routine over the course of just a few months, literally doubling each night's sleep duration. Now, if I find that my sleep is less than what it should be, I can trace the problem back to a violation of one of the dozen or so system guidelines I initially identified in my sleep system improvement project. I attacked the overall problem by isolating the primary sleep system and then breaking it down into subsystems that could be manipulated. By taking an outside and slightly elevated vantage point, I was able to tweak my sleep process to more and more efficiency, one piece at a time. It was pure mechanics. Is there a major problem you are coping with right now? Can you break it down into segments? Can you modify the segments one at a time?